Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
New U.S. sanctions on Iran took effect today, 6 months after President Trump pulled the U.S. out of the international nuclear deal.
The sanctions target Iran's shipping, financial, and energy sectors, all key to the country's already struggling economy.
The bombs, which the FBI referred to as improvised explosive devices, were sent to the FBI's bomb laboratory in Quantico, Virginia.
We're in Mexico again tonight as thousands of migrants try to find a faster way to the U.S. border. The White House says it's now getting help from the Mexican.
Breaking news out of Pittsburgh. The man accused in the shooting at the synagogue in Pittsburgh is pleading not guilty, and he also wants a jury trial. He's facing a 44 count. So,
in the final seconds before the Boeing 737 MAX crashed into the water, it was traveling at more than 500 kilometers an hour. All 189 people on board were killed.
You've now entered the House of Mystery.
Crime, conspiracy, history, and science.
With your hosts, Al Warren, Mike Brown,
Julie Sav, Michael Butterfield,
Dr. Joseph Usinski, and Michael Hawley.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and I'm Al Warren sitting at the controls. And on the East Coast, we have Mr. David North Martino.
I'm here. Thanks, Al.
I didn't say a thing about the name. That's it.
No.
Mrs. Martino.
That's right. There we go.
I still can't get used to it, but that's all right. I'll figure it out. I'll take some pills or something. Well, today we have a special guest, and he's pretty shy normally, but we've got him to come on the show and talk. And his last book, Magic for the Resistance, Rituals and Spells for Change. So Michael M. Hughes, thanks for being here.
Thank you, and I think that's probably the first time I've been called shy in my entire life. So.
I was just trying to soften the people up, thinking, oh, he's a cute little shy guy. He's coming on, and he's going to talk about basket weaving. And
yes.
So now, Magic for the Resistance, that's a totally different style of writing. What made you go there?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a long story, so I will try to kind of sum it up in an easily digestible form. Yeah, it is my first nonfiction book. It was it was interesting circumstances led to it. Essentially, in 2017, shortly after a certain president, who I'll leave unnamed, was elected. I and many other people were a little disturbed by things that were happening, like all the rhetoric about, you know, immigrants being murderers and the border wall and just the general tone of the presidency, the ban on people from Muslim countries coming into the U.S. that encouraged a lot of people to, you know, head out to airports. It was a really turbulent time. I don't think it's any real secret that I'm a pretty liberal, progressive guy, proudly so. I've been that way all my life. And I was just really disturbed by what was happening. It seemed like America, with the election of that president, was really going in the opposite direction of things, a lot of things that I value. I've always been an activist too. I've been an activist since I was in my teens in the anti-nuclear movement. It was where I first, you know, started like marching and carrying signs and writing to Congress people and things like that. So I really felt compelled to be active against the policies that I was seeing this president was doing. So I also realized that in order to kind of break through the media, the 24-hour and forget it sort of media cycle nowadays, that in order to gain traction with anything, I have always believed it has to kind of come in out of left field. And being a practicing magician, I am not a witch, but I do practice magic. I've always found it a fascinating subject and a practical, interesting, enjoyable thing to do. I had the idea that why not do a ritual against the president and make it like a mass ritual, like publish it online so that people can join in, make it short, make it easy to do, make it kind of funny, and just put it out there. And it just is a kind of, you know, something people aren't expecting, something that might gain some traction. And I was inspired by the Yippies in particular. I've always been a fan of like Abby Hoffman and Jerry Rubin and some of the things they did, like throwing dollar bills on the stock exchange floor and watching, you know, all the stock brokers scramble for the money. Thought that was always a great piece of activism. And also in particular their levitation of the Pentagon in 1969, which I thought was just a beautiful piece of like absurdist theater. At that time they were trying to levitate and exorcise the demons of the Pentagon to stop the war in Vietnam. And I just thought that was great. I love that. It's just so freaky and weird. And, you know, unless you were actually on like 250 mics of acid, you probably didn't see the Pentagon rise up and spin around and demons shoot out of it. But it was a really beautiful, absurd, iconic moment that was like a reaction to the absurdity of the Vietnam War and the era and, you know, like students getting shot down on Kent State and things like that. So it was, I just thought it was a beautiful, absurdist piece of political theater and activism that actually got people to think. So my idea was to create this binding spell, because binding spells are like kind of the oldest sort of spells in the historical record. Like people used to write them on little sheets of lead, like bind that jerk who, you know, stole my donkey from me. And they'd write that down on a piece of lead and then they'd throw it in a well or in a hole in a graveyard or something like that. So these spells essentially are encouraged to like stop people from doing bad things. So I thought, well, what a great thing to do, have a binding spell that like people could take part in that's kind of silly but kind of serious, and we can all do it at the same time on the waning crescent moon. And yeah, you know, so I just threw this thing together, and I remember telling a friend about it and him saying, you know, that's maybe the dumbest idea you've ever that is just absolutely ridiculous, man. But yeah, but I couldn't stop thinking about it. So I posted on Medium one afternoon. You know, I polished it, you know, had some other people look at it, some other like magicians and occultists and things like that. And I polished it up and I really, you know, tried to make it just like a really strong message, but again, with some elements of humor in it and things like that. And I posted it on Medium, and then within hours, like, I realized something big was happening. Like, initially I thought maybe like 20 or 30 people might find it funny or interesting or silly and might do it, but it just went viral with a speed like nothing I've ever done has come close to it. So within an hour, there were thousands of people sharing it on Facebook and Twitter and everywhere else. And then I just literally could click the refresh my browser and watch it going up by like hundreds and then thousands. And before long, like the same day, I was sitting at work, you know, I'm trying to get some work done in my office job, my day job. And all of a sudden, the emails started coming in, the phone started ringing off the hook, reporters wanting to cover it. And this thing, it just went through the stratosphere. Like, I stuck a little, like, note on my office door and closed it. Like, I'm on the phone, you know, like, I can't talk, don't bother me. And it just kept blowing up bigger and bigger and bigger. Before I knew it, like, CNN was calling, Fox News was calling, you know, all the major newspapers, Boston Globe, et cetera. And it just would not stop. So I had planned this, the first binding spell was to take place every month. And the goal was to drive the president, you know who, out of office. That was the stated goal. And like the humorous elements in it were like there was a little stubby orange candle to represent his stubby orange, I don't know, fingers maybe you might say. And so this thing just like blew up beyond anything I could possibly imagine, to the point that it was just surreal how many reporters were calling. And I planned this for like 2 weeks after I published it. And as that night got close, the night of the waning crescent moon on, I think it was February 24th, 2017, all these TV stations kept calling, going, we want to send a camera to like tape this. You know, this is big CNN, you know, producers just calling me on the phone and emailing me going, we want to cover this. We want to cover people doing it. Can we film you? Do you know anyone we could find in New York? So I started asking, you know, all these people that said they were doing it. And a lot of them were just afraid. You know, they didn't want to put themselves out as like raw meat to be doxxed and, you know, and whatever else people do nowadays when they don't like what someone's doing publicly. And I didn't want a camera crew to film me. I was getting together with about 40 people I knew to do the ritual in a backyard in Baltimore. And I didn't want my poor friend who was hosting it to have, you know, to have like TV trucks all over his neighborhood freaking out his neighbors. So I did something which is a little strange, and I lied. I said, just because they wouldn't leave me alone. And I was like so broken down by all these media requests to film this thing. I said, I hear there are a bunch of witches doing it outside of Trump Tower in New York. And they were like, awesome, great, let's do it. So we're going to send a crew. And after I did that, I told a couple news outlets, I thought, maybe I shouldn't have done that. You know, it's kind of a crappy thing to do, but I was just so tired of them asking me. So the night of this binding spell came, and you know, at that point I was like, I hadn't slept, I was just running on fumes, and we did this ritual, and it felt amazing, and everyone cheered, and I realized at that point, like, thousands, maybe, you know, tens of thousands of people were doing this all over the world. And afterward, I just kind of like sunk down on a log that was outside my friend's house and just sat there. And I was like, oh my God, we did it. You know, we did it. And another friend came up with his phone and held it up to my face and said, check it out. And it was footage from CNN. And there were witches sitting on the sidewalk outside of Trump Tower in New York doing the ritual that I had written. And that's like, my head just kind of exploded at that point, you know, like, oh my God, what have I done? You know, what this, this absolute surreality of this thing that I thought, you know, a few people might embrace going so global and so worldwide and being covered on, you know, national and cable news just blew my mind. I mean, it still freaks me out when I look back at what happened, and it's 4 years later, and I'm still a little, you know, shocked at how this all happened.
Well, you know, it's so, did you guys do it in the nude or?
Yeah, I don't think anyone would have wanted to see me.
Sky-clad, right?
Sky-clad, yeah. I mean, I'm not a witch, so I don't go by the witch rules.
Yeah,
the witch rules, yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
too bad. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, it would have been. But so what exactly, so if you were to explain to people what magic really is.
Yeah, well, that is the big question, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But how do you perceive, like, in as short as a way as you can, to try and describe what magic is compared to
Know? Yeah. I see magic as kind of art, in a way. I think the way I see magic is when you intentionally try to kind of push the needle of probability a little in one direction. And you do that through art, you do that through ritual. And, you know, a lot of people think magic, I wish I had a yacht, and you wave your magic wand and a yacht pulls up into the harbor and you hop on and crack a bottle of champagne open, something like that. But that's kind of silly. I think magic doesn't break the laws of physics, the laws of reality. But I think when you employ ritual actions in your life with intention, you can kind of nudge things a little bit. So magic works best when it's something that is possible. Obviously, if it's impossible, like that making the yacht, you know, appear, it's not going to happen, or a Ferrari in your driveway or something like that. But let's say you're looking for a job, or you're trying to get a book contract or something like that. I think using magical practices can, you know, maybe, and who knows how it works, you know, maybe it's just doing a ritual might make you a little more committed. It might give you a little extra energy or something like that. So I think, you know, for me, just doing a ritual kind of reaffirms your commitment to something. And that's always helpful. And doing magic puts you in sort of an altered state if it's done correctly. And that can, you really can create change that way. But like I said, magic is sort of art. So I consider great artists magicians in a way, like someone who is like a rock star, like let's say Prince or something. I mean, just by creating this amazing art can really change people's consciousness. And you know, certain music can change people's beliefs about something. You look at like protest music or something like that. But magic is also as simple as, like, you know, my grandmother used to go into the local Catholic church and light a candle for someone. And my wife's grandmother's Jewish. She used to light candles, you know, for, you know, every time my wife would get on an airplane, she'd be like, I'm lighting a candle for you so you'll be safe. So I think we all kind of do magic a lot. I think as human beings, we're sort of magical thinkers, whether we, you know, whether we try to be, you know, really materialist or not, or whether we're, you know, we just don't believe in magic, we still kind of, we can't help but think magically because it's kind of part of who we are.
Yeah.
So does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. You know, and back in the 80s, I had friends that used to throw condoms in the aisles of the Catholic Church. That's sort of magic.
Sure, yeah. I mean, that gets you know, quite the reaction, I'm sure. You know,
But that in itself, isn't that sort of part of what it is? It's sort of, because what you're doing is you're changing someone's comfort zone.
Yeah, you can, you know, changing their comfort zone or, you know, with the type of magic I wrote about in this book is it's doing rituals to kind of reaffirm your commitment to, you know, social causes or justice or things like that. And what was really the most beautiful feedback I got from people from the whole binding spell and the other sort of rituals that we all collectively did together was the people who had never done anything like it before. So they would do this binding spell. I mean, they were just like me. They were just like terrified by what was happening politically. And, you know, they were all writing letters and making phone calls and going, you know, like going to the Women's March, the March for Science and things like that. But then after doing this ritual, so many people said, you know what, like I needed this, like this just gave me like renewed energy. It made me feel like I had my power back again, because it's easy to feel powerless when you're doing all these, you know, activist sort of things, but things aren't really changing. It's easy to get beaten down as like an activist when you see you're doing all this work, but the tide keeps coming at you. The fire hose of like bad stuff is just like spraying full force. But what we found was doing a ritual where you kind of, you know, it's almost like a self-exorcism. Like you, all that despair and all that anger and all those toxic sort of emotions you're feeling, you can purge them. Really, like rituals just kind of, you know, can reset you in a way and give you a target to kind of focus your energy and then to let it go. So that was really great. So many people just said, I felt so much better after I did this binding spell. Like I felt good again.
It made them feel like they accomplished something, like they were doing something.
But they were doing something. That's the thing. A lot of people criticize this sort of stuff as like slacktivism, you know. Oh, you're right. Just lighting a candle and wishing that, you know, Donald, what's his face, will go away. But most of the people that were doing this ritual were also doing a lot of other things too. So I tried to really, you know, keep that in mind that yes, doing rituals is helpful, but calling up your congressman is like really important. You know, not just lighting candles and trying to do things magically that way, but you know, the real hardcore magic act is when you call up your representatives and say, hey, you know, this is not okay.
Right. Well, you know, one of the first questions people will have listening is, you know, do they have to be a witch or a pagan or be involved in some sort of witchcraft in order to do this?
Yeah, absolutely. That's always a question, and absolutely not. We had, for this binding spell, there were Christians doing it. There was a Hindu group that was doing it. Jews were doing it. One of the people I know very well was doing it is actually like a Catholic. She works with Catholic nuns. And I intentionally wrote this ritual so that it could be tweaked. You know, if you're a Christian, call on Jesus to effect this change. You know, if you're Buddhist, if you're atheist, if you're agnostic, you could still do a ritual. You don't have to believe in it to do it and to feel a change in yourself when you do it. So absolutely not. I mean, I'm not a witch, but the media, you know, when they hear spell, the first thing they think is Harry Potter, witches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they don't, there's not this widespread, you know, understanding that magic is kind of cross-cultural, and there's all sorts of ways to do magic. It's not just witches. But I love the witches. You know, the witches, like, totally embraced this and made it their own. And, you know, this Facebook group popped up. It has 7,000 people now, and it just keeps growing and growing, you know, even though the main target of the main ritual that we all kind of coalesced around is gone, or at least temporarily gone. So it's for everybody. And I think magic is for everybody. Like if someone's sick and you light a candle and you say a prayer for them, that's a magical act. And we all know that it if nothing else, it often makes us feel better. And there's nothing wrong with doing something to feel better. I mean, you know, coming out of a pandemic and a year of just of constant, you know, bad news and things like that, I think we all deserve to do things that make us feel better.
Well, but how effective do you think this is? And in your experience, what do you think of doing things, you know, magical things or spells or bindings and stuff like that? Do you think that it actually does things?
Yeah, I mean, at the very minimum, it helps people stay focused on something. You know, we did this ritual every month for 4 years, and it worked. I mean, did we make it work? I don't know. I can't say that. How much did we push the needle in one direction or another to clear that occupant out of the White House? But he's gone. So, we can certainly take credit for it. And that's how magic works. When you get your result, it works. But of course, you know, I can't say we did that. You know, we made this happen. But what I can say is that doing a ritual regularly with, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of people at the same time, all around the world, it sure kept us focused. You know, it sure kept our engines going sometimes when maybe we felt burned out, or we felt like we couldn't do anymore. We felt like we couldn't make one more phone call or write one more email or go to one more march. This having a ritual to engage a community and keep the community focused, I think that's part of what works. So I'd say it depends. You know, the answer is it depends. But one way it definitely did work is to keep a community focused on a very singular goal and united and just, you know, engaged.
I wonder, what do you think about people that are, they're probably a little bit more scared of such things, spells and castings and bindings. And in fact, they might even consider it evil. And they might say that what you're doing is trying to take control over people. You know, they might put you as like some sort of a, you know, a voodoo sort of guru or something, right? So how do you respond to something on that side?
Yeah, well, there was plenty of criticism from all over the place. I mean, I purposely put the word demons in the ritual because I knew that would freak the fundamentalists and the evangelicals out and stir them up. And of course it did. So, you know, part of this was, although it was very sincere in its aims, it was also kind of a performance art piece as well. You know, it was designed to provoke and get people talking, and designed to provoke the people who I knew it would provoke. And it most certainly did. Of course, I had all sorts of, you know, fundamentalists and evangelicals telling me I was going to hell and all that, and death threats, which I always find kind of amusing coming from, you know, people supposedly of Christian backgrounds wanting to kill people.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Kind of doesn't jive with the Jesus that I learned about when I was a kid. I can see that, but the way I constructed this ritual was not to like harm anyone or to hurt anyone. It was simply, and if you read it, it's very carefully worded, to stop the target of the spell from doing harmful things. So in theory, this spell would only stop harmful acts. It would not, you know, wouldn't hurt its targets. It wouldn't inhibit or stop the target from doing anything unless it was harmful. And the kinds of harm were very specifically spelled out in the spell too. So, and what was fascinating to me is the criticism that came from the pagan and witch communities. Like, I wasn't expecting that. But there's this thing called the threefold law that a lot of witches adhere to. It's like, if you do something bad, it comes back to you threefold and things like that. First of all, that was just invented in the 1940s by Gerald Gardner, who basically invented modern witchcraft. You know, it's not like some ancient thing passed down by, you know, a matriarchal goddess culture from, you know, the Neolithic, as a lot of people might try to explain. So I I'm not a witch, so I didn't go by it anyway. But I thought that this ritual was pretty carefully crafted and pretty clear in its intent to bind a certain person from doing harm to democracy, harm to immigrants, harm to social issues, things that a lot of us saw as deeply threatened by this kind of authoritarian autocratic leadership that was in place. So all that criticism, first of all, I mean, some people are just going to think that anything is evil if it's not their preferred brand of religion. That's fine, you know. It's a free country. We have, you know, the right to practice any sort of spiritual practice we want as long as we're not harming somebody. And I feel like this was a very, you know, carefully crafted bit of magic that no one could say, oh, you're trying to hurt So, you know, a lot of people said, what if the Secret Service shows up at your door, you know? And I said, man, if that happens, I will ride that that publicity to, you know, to superstardom or whatever. I mean, could you imagine the Secret Service showing up at someone's house and saying, we hear you're casting spells on the president? I mean, that would be like the most brilliant Abby Hoffman sort of moment imaginable. It was fun and it was serious and people had their criticisms, but people are always going to have their criticisms. That's the world we live in.
You use the term magical thinking, and that is typically used like negatively, kind of as a pejorative within like the scientific community. Are you trying to kind of reclaim that term?
Yeah, I love that term. I call myself a magical thinker because I believe, I'm an absolute science fanatic as well. And that might make some people scratch their heads, but I think magic and science are just two different ways of looking at the world. Magic is more of like an art, where science is a method. Science takes things apart and looks at the individual pieces and figures out how things work. Magic is like a metaphorical, artistic way of engaging with reality. And they're not in conflict. I really believe that magic is just an approach to life, take for example divination, which is probably the most common magical practice. I mean, we all know someone who's gone to like a psychic or a palm reader, or tarot card reader, things like that. Well, divination is just about looking at a situation with symbols, random symbols, and making stories out of those symbols. I do tarot card readings. I've done them professionally for, you know, 25 plus years at this point. And I don't claim to see the future when I talk to people who come to me for readings. But what we do is I mix up some really potent, you know, deeply significant symbols on these cards. And then we lay them out and we talk about them and we talk about what the client is experiencing and we look at the images and I talk about what comes to my mind and it's like a conversation. So, you know, it's not – so a scientist should look at that and go, oh, that's art. You know, you're having a conversation about emotions and feelings and situations. So you don't need – magic and science aren't in conflict. They're just two separate – ways of engaging with reality.
Interesting.
Yeah. So where does this come from for you? Like, how did you get involved in this type of magical thinking, as you call it? Like, what was the fire that led behind this?
Yeah, well, it's, I think a lot of it goes back to my childhood, really. I was brought up Catholic, you know, so going to Mass every Sunday, whether I wanted to or not, dragged by my parents, you know, it was like the incense, the candles, the singing, just the atmosphere of, you know, a sanctified sort of environment was really appealing to me. As I got older, I kind of rejected the dogma of the church, but I still really resonate with that sort of ritualistic, you know, the incense, the candles, the feeling you can get when you walk into like a really beautifully designed, spacious place that's dedicated to spiritual pursuits. I still love going into churches, especially really old churches. I love the vibe and the atmosphere. I just don't go like during the actual church service, because I'm not much of a fan of mainstream religion anymore. But it's, so I've always had this appreciation for that sort of ritualistic atmosphere and engagement. But I've always felt, you know, sort of like a mystic, even as a kid. I always thought about like, what what is life? What is the universe? Why are we here? Now, I've read a lot of like Buddhism, Taoism, and, you know, studied a lot of like shamanic type cultures and practices, took psychedelics as a, you know, in my late teens, which really kind of opened my mind to like how our brains shape reality and how just like by ingesting a chemical, we can look at the world so differently. But I've just always been into magical stuff. Like I got a tarot card deck when I was 11. I was the James Bond 007 tarot card deck, which I still have. You know, it's like one of my favorite possessions. And it may have been because I was more influenced by the picture of Jane Seymour on the box than the cards themselves. But so I just started playing around with tarot cards. Also, my father was kind of a paradoxical guy. He was you know, deeply Catholic and very religious. But he also did transcendental meditation, and he read books about like ghosts and UFOs and things like that. And I would just pick these books up and read them when he was done with them. And this was the 70s. You know, I grew up as a kid in the 70s, and like occultism and the supernatural was everywhere. I used to watch In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy, and you know, Chariots of the Gods was at the movie theater, and you know, the original Ancient Alien stuff. And so the 70s were just like soaking in the supernatural and the occult and, you know, esoteric things like that. So it's really, I feel like it's just part of who I've always been. And so naturally I gravitated towards the idea of magic. And the way I got into it was through divination, tarot cards and things like that. Because once you start a divination practice, if you're serious about it, it really makes you, you know, it can really change your way of understanding reality. And I really believe that if you approach reality as magical, that it will respond that way. And divination is really a great sort of way to get into a magical thinking practice. I mean, even if you think it's only psychological games that you're playing with yourself, it works. You know, you can use tarot cards or the I Ching or runes or you know, anything, you know, sticks, throwing sticks on the ground or bones or whatever. But if you do a divination practice, you'll find out that somehow you get interesting feedback from it. And you can believe it's like spirits, you could believe it's your higher self, you could believe it's just psychological tricks you're doing. But it does something, and it works. You get legitimate feedback from it. And I've done so many tarot readings over the years with people I do not know. And you know, I'm not using cold reading or stuff like that. But it works, you know. They get good information out of it, and they keep coming back and paying. And I feel like I'm providing a service if it's helping people. And that's really kind of the goal, is just to help people out. But I one more thing before I monopolize this conversation too much longer. When I was a kid, because I think this is a big part of it, and I should throw this in there. I started reading books about mentalism, which is magic, like sleight of hand sort of magic, but it's mind reading magic. So it's trickery, but it aims to duplicate what looks like psychic phenomenon. So asking someone to think of a card, and they tell me the card, and I just happen to, you know, pull it out of my pocket or something like that. And I found that magic to be like really powerful. You do a card trick for somebody, they're like, oh, that's cool. You know, the guy knows how to manipulate cards. But if you pull a thought out of someone's mind, or you project a thought into someone's mind, or you predict what's going to be on a newspaper the following day, that's kind of mind-blowing. And that's, I found that kind of magic more adult, you know, and it's more sort of mind bending for people, because they think, wow, maybe this is real. And I love that sort of slippery boundary between real magic and trickery. Like, it's always fascinated me. So doing mentalism and being able to simulate, you know, magic or psychic abilities and results made me start thinking, well, can you do this for real? And a lot of mentalists, and unlike magicians like, you know, the Amazing Randy, who's like, you know, hardcore materialist skeptic, a lot of people who practice mentalism, they start to kind of imagine that psychic stuff is real because it happens to them. Like, they'll make a mistake. They won't have the name of the person that, you know, the person they pulled out of the audience. They said, think of your friend's name, and the trick goes wrong, and then they have to try to do it for real, and it works sometimes. So mentalists tend, more so than just straight up sleight of hand magicians, mentalists tend to be a little more, little more in the way of believers in psychic sort of stuff. They're also good at exposing fake psychics and fake mediums and things like that. And that's why when I see investigations of people with alleged paranormal abilities or psychic abilities, if they don't have a magician on hand, the people trying to research whether it's real or not, I have zero trust in their conclusions. You need to have people who know how to do that sort of trickery when you're doing any kind of investigation of someone with alleged psychic or paranormal abilities. Like, you need that. If you don't have someone that knows how the trickery is done, then your conclusions are worthless.
That makes sense. Do you bring your magical practices, rituals, things that you've learned, mentalism, into your fiction?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do. My fiction is always tends to be probably, you know, with you and every other writer, the kind of stuff you're fascinated by tends to wind up in your fiction. And so my Blackwater Lights trilogy is very much about magic, like kind of dark occult magic, because I like scary stuff. You know, I've liked monster movies and horror since I was a kid. So my first fiction, my short stories and my novels, my Blackwater Lights trilogy, are all, you know, dark. They're meant to disturb and, you know, hopefully scare people. And because I love the power of that emotion, but definitely magic. Like, I've kind of interwoven. The third book in the trilogy is really the one that's most central to my ideas about magic. That's where I kind of, you know, it's where I sort of throw my philosophy of magic into my fiction. So absolutely. And I think as writers, you know, we all know that the stuff that most interests us is the stuff we want to write about in fiction too.
How, you know, when you look back at this, how do you think this has changed you at this side of it, you know, from 4 years ago? And would you do it again?
This experience, the binding spell, and then, you know, we did some other rituals for civil rights and you know, against the NRA and things like that, which also is another one that objectively was pretty successful, considering they're essentially bankrupt at this point. I would do it again. I feel very lucky that so many people found something I wrote to be so meaningful to them. I feel in particularly really happy that so many people got a taste of what, like, doing a ritual can do for them, how it can make them feel, especially the people that never did anything like it before. Of course, there were some negative aspects to it, like, you know, getting death threats and, you know, people saying they're, you know, either the Christians saying that they're, excuse me, that they're sending, you know, armies of angels to, you know, kill me, or the occultists who happen to be supporters of that president who are cursing me, and just, it's, you know, it's never nice to open up your email and just see people saying things like they want to kill you and watch out and we're watching you and all that sort of stuff. But that's just kind of, you know, that happens to everybody who is political in our current era of social media and things like that. I mean, it's just a fact of life. So I kind of expected it, and I just learned to really brush it off. But in the bigger scheme of things, I just feel really, really grateful to all the people who found this piece of this writing that I wrote, this ritual I created, that they found it so helpful in their lives and so meaningful. And I also, it was not my idea to mix politics with magic. Other people had sort of done that. And in my book, Magic for the Resistance, I talk about how magic has been used politically, like, throughout history. I mean, it's just some really fantastic stories of witches or occultists or other people using magic to, you know, for political aims. There was a lot more than I realized when I started researching the book. But I feel lucky that I kind of brought that into the popular culture spotlight, and that so many people now feel that it's okay to do magical sort of acts or spells or rituals, whatever you want to call it, for social or political causes. Like, I'm grateful, because had I just written this and put it online and 20 people read it like I originally suspected, that would have been fun and we wouldn't be talking about it right now. But the fact somehow this resonated with so many people. And I feel like there's a couple reasons, and it's, first of all, like, the witchcraft is just blowing up, as anyone who's on Instagram or TikTok knows. And I think that's because a lot of younger people are turned off by, you know, they see the Catholic Church, they see all the sexual abuse that was covered up, they look at evangelicals and they see that, you know, evangelicals just, you know, arguing against, you know, LGBTQ people, and younger people are a lot more open and a lot more socially and politically progressive. So they're looking for spirituality, but they're not finding it in the traditional churches. And there's even a term, spiritual but not religious, is like the largest growing affiliation in this country. Like, the people have a spiritual urge, and what things like witchcraft or you know, indigenous shamanic practices or magic, what they do is they kind of say you can be a spiritual person, but you don't need a middleman in the way. You don't need a priest or a rabbi or an imam or whatever. You can approach the divine in any way that you wish, and you can have a personal relationship, and you can operate as the priest or the rabbi, you know, like, you are the spiritual technician. You don't need an intermediary. And I think that really resonates a lot with people. So what I was lucky enough to do is combine that trend in our society with the reaction to the president and his policies and the people behind him supporting those policies. And it just all came together just so beautifully. So more than anything, I just feel really fortunate to have been in the right place at the right time with the right words. And as a writer, it's also kind of wild to know that, you know, thousands of people are saying the words you wrote at the same time. We all, as writers, we know people read our books and things like that, but knowing people are like saying these words with passion together at the same time, like this litany connecting each other all around the planet, was just still boggles my mind. And I just feel really fortunate that I was able to kind of birth this thing and to see it come to life.
Hmm. Now, let's talk about where people can find you. So when someone wants to send you a hate letter and they're going to kill you, where should they go? You
know, right. There's send any hate mail sent to Mar-a-Lago. any money you can send directly to me. I'm all over, you could just Google my name, Michael M. Hughes. My website is Michael M. Hughes on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Clubhouse and, you know, anywhere else I can kind of, you know, plant my flag. It's Michael M. Hughes. So my books and everything, my novels, short fiction, all that stuff is all linked from my website. So if you Magic for the Resistance, you can buy in any bookstore. If they don't have it, they can order for you. You can, all, of course, grab all this stuff online as well.
We'll have all that up on our website and all that so people can find you and stuff.
Awesome.
So, hey, did you get a lot of, you know, titty shots? And I mean, you know, just, I mean, when you become popular like that and you get the hate mail, you also get all the nudes.
Yeah, unfortunately, no nudes, you know.
Oh.
I know. Like,
No dick shots? Come on.
No, you know, nothing. It's just, I don't know why. You know, there were some very attractive people of all varieties who, you know, I connected with and everything, but no, you know, for some strange reason, maybe I'm just not good looking or something. I don't know. I just did not get that kind of fan mail. So I wouldn't argue against it.
No, you're perfectly a handsome man. Please,
you've got no shots. You're making
there.
Me blush.
But I think, you know, come on. But once you get famous, it doesn't matter. They send it to you. I get all sorts of nasty stuff, and I love it. So everybody, I want you to get on board here and, you know, send Michael your favorite shots. I mean,
here we go.
Yeah, we'll have a contest. end of the year, you know, best.
How about just show me your, you know, right. I mean, I have had people send photos of their magic wands, but not that kind of
one. Oh. Darn. Jeez.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I don't want my wife looking at my phone and seeing it, you know, blowing up with all
say no,
naked
honey,
photos. So,
I didn't know what that. I don't know that person really.
It's Alan's fault.
Blame it on me. I do it. Yeah, I'll take the blame. You know, put it all on me. Well, it's been a pleasure. It's always good to talk to you, and hopefully we'll have you on again, and we'll talk more when you. Get something more going on. Magic for the Resistance 2.
Yeah, who knows? I think I really feel like getting back to fiction, though. Magic for the Resistance, the crazy story about this book is my publisher, Llewellyn, they wanted it to come out before the midterm elections in 2018.
Right.
And so that gave me 1 month to write the book.
Wow.
And I thought I was going to die. Like, I come home, kiss my wife, kiss the kids, and go down to my subterranean office in the basement, and I would finish up around 3 or 4 in the morning, get up at, you know, 7, take the kids to school, work my day job, come home, and do it again for a solid month. And so this book nearly killed me, so... I think it's decent. I think it's well-written book, and I really gave it my all, so I don't think it's like it shows, but I just want people to realize that, damn, man, that was the hardest thing I've ever done, was to write an entire book in a month. Most writers get like 6 months to a year to finish something.
Yeah.
I had 1 month.
Uh-huh.
But I survived.
Well, you survived.
Yeah.
It made you stronger. Well, or weaker. I don't know. Depends on
you. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure. Bigger bags under my eyes for sure. So then they'll never go away. But
well, it's character. Well, our guest has been the one and only Michael M. Hughes, the handsome magic for the resistance, the rituals and spells for change. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you. It is always a pleasure and talking to you both. And I would love to come back again sometime, maybe after the next novel, which will take me longer than a month to write. So.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.